Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the July NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press one, then zero on your telephone keypad to be placed in the queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the one-zero command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask Tim to read the open public meeting notice.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Tim. Manera, could you conduct the roll call, please? Yes.
Chairman Terrence O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Sarlow.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Marcia Morley.
Present.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Aaron Cruz, Executive Representative.
Here.
Aaron Binder for State Treasurer, Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Acting Commissioner Justin Zimmerlin.
Here.
For Banking. Chief White for Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean LaTorette.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. There are two sets of meeting minutes for approval today from the June meeting. First, the regular meeting minutes. Before you are the minutes from the June 14th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. I would request that board members state their name for the record when making a motion or seconding. Could I hear a motion to approve the June 14th board minutes?
Motion to approve, Marcia Morley.
Thank you, Marcia. Second?
Second, Charlotte.
Thank you, Charles. Any discussion? Any recusals or abstentions? Or please indicate if you're in favor by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No recusals or abstentions. The minutes are approved. Secondly, before you are the executive session minutes from the June 14th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. Could I hear a motion to approve the executive session meeting minutes?
Robert Shimko, motion.
Thank you, Robert. Second?
Second, Marley.
Thank you. Please indicate if you're in favor by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No recusals or abstentions? The executive committee meeting minutes are approved. Let me give you a brief chairman's remarks. Welcome to the July board meeting of the NJEDA. We have a very full agenda today, including a very important item the board will be asked to consider that will help secure the New Jersey wind port's position as the Northeast strategic hub for offshore wind. Offshore wind presents a once-in-a-generation opportunity for New Jersey, creating jobs for our children, furthering our clean energy goals, and ensuring a more resilient environment and economy. Today at the Port of Paulsboro, workers are actively engaged in offshore wind manufacturing, fabricating steel monopiles for turbines. Just 30 miles down the road, construction continues at the nation's first purpose-built wind port, which is projected in the next several years to add $500 million annually to the state's economy and drive the creation of 1,500 or more manufacturing and operation jobs. I had the privilege of touring the wind port last week with other members of the EDA and was really amazed at the extraordinary work being done by the NJEDA staff, our subcontractors, partners, the men and women of South Jersey building trades to build the nation's first purpose-built offshore marshaling port. It's actually quite an amazing engineering feat. Today, members of the board will be asked to approve the NJEDA's entry into a development and sublease agreement with offshore wind developer Orsted Wind Power North America, LLC, for the sublease of up to 34 acres of the property, known as Parcel A, at the Windport. Orsted, which will be New Jersey's Windport inaugural tenant, expects to create up to 200 jobs over its lease term. Orsted's Ocean Wind 1 project, which the port is enabling, is expected to create over 15,000 jobs over its 25-year operational life. On July 6, Governor Murphy signed a bill that allows Orsted to benefit from federal tax credits, allowing the company to proceed with the first of two energy projects it plans in New Jersey. As Governor Murphy said at the time, the financial aid ensures that offshore wind projects and the jobs they create happen in New Jersey rather than in competing states. Orsted's tenancy at the Windport is pivotal to the advancement of the offshore wind sector in New Jersey. We appreciate the efforts of Governor Murphy and the NJEDA staff, as well as the consideration of this board, to lay the groundwork for this important project to proceed. The incredible progress at the Windport is just one of the many indicators of NJEDA's confidence in executing projects and programs that advance the Murphy administration's vision for New Jersey's leadership in a host of sectors. The ability of the NJEDA team to bring this vision to life has garnered the confidence of the governor and the legislature, leading to the allocation of nearly $450 million in the fiscal 2024 budget to the NJEDA for the advancement of programs that create equitable and inclusive economic opportunities for all New Jerseyans. Now I'm going to turn it over to Tim, who will walk you through a quick review of the impact of the 2024 budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I provided a written CEO report, as we always do, which contains a bunch of information about things we've been up to, particularly in the last 6 weeks or so since we were together, but I do want to do sort of a special presentation here on the budget and some of the summary bills. Before I do that, I have an even more special presentation, though, even more special, which is that today we are marking a bittersweet occasion, 46 years of service from Patty Jerome to the New Jersey Economic Development Authority. She's retiring on, I was going to say Friday, but I think it's Monday, right?
Monday.
You're coming in Monday anyway?
Hello.
All right. I'll pick that thing. It's just an extraordinary career and impact on this organization and on this family. Patty was just telling me yesterday, we had a luncheon in this room yesterday, and a number of folks who served in the EDA and retired and had come back to wish Patty well and congratulate her. And she was telling me yesterday when she joined the EDA, there she was. There were 14 employees at the EDA. We're a bit bigger now. She's been a pivotal part of that growth and development, and we couldn't be where we are as an organization without her. And we will miss her, and we wish her everything of great success and good fortune in her retirement. I have with me a letter from the governor of this great state. Dear Ms. Jerome, okay, Patty. Dear Patty. I'm pleased to extend my very best wishes and congratulations to you as you celebrate your retirement from the New Jersey EDA. As you reminisce about your career, you can be proud of the respect and admiration you've earned throughout 46 years of state service. New Jersey is fortunate to have benefited from the dedication of civil servants like you. I join with your family, friends, and colleagues in applauding your commitment to the residents of New Jersey. Thank you for a job well done. Congratulations and best wishes for good health and happiness in the future. My very best, Philip D. Murphy, Governor, State of New Jersey. So let's all give Patty a big. Probably worth what's supposed to do. Bruce put on a suit tie and everything. Right? It was good one instead of a talk.
We were in here less than 24 hours ago celebrating Patty, but the one thing that I didn't mention yesterday was the walls and the halls and all the people in here. Your memory is forever etched in this building. I will miss you. Lori will miss you. But, you know, like we said, we're still friends. Better text us. We better go to lunch. But this place is not the place it would be today without your efforts. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Regular scheduled programming. A couple things. Thank you for being the first slide. As required by law, we have some great information I should mention, but it's not related to the budget or the bills. But Whenever I speak in public, we should always be mentioning this. The CNBC rankings came out a couple weeks ago, and we earned the distinction of being the most improved state. We jumped from 42nd to 19. We'd like to be number 1 to 10, somewhere in that range, but we'll take 23 places of growth. We've been 50th in the economy in 2022. We rose to 19th in 2023. I reserve the right to critique studies when they don't give us the answer we want, but this one I'll note is a pretty extraordinary report card for Governor Murphy and the entire administration of the state. It's not in the CNBC report, but this is true. We have had the fastest rate of private sector job creation in the region in the last 24 months. That region includes Pennsylvania, by the way, for those who like to point to Pennsylvania and say, hey, why can't we be more like those folks? It's a lovely state, but we're growing faster than them. We were ranked number 3 by CNBC for quality of life and the best place to live and work as well. So our momentum continues to be strong, and we should celebrate that and mark that moment and just take an opportunity. I think the work of the EDA and this board and our team, you know, it's been a part of that success story. Obviously, the governor's investment in things like higher education, infrastructure, quality, you know, education, any number of things has been a critical driver of this. But certainly, rather moving in the right direction rather than the wrong direction. So take a moment to mark that and celebrate that. Pouring some booster rocket, rocket fuel on that. We have a number of new initiatives and new things that are coming our way. And I want to just take a few minutes and whip through. And I apologize, this will be a little longer than my normal CEO report, but the chairman mentioned this is $500 million of funding and a whole bunch of important bills as well. So the governor has signed all the bills on the left there, offshore wind, Aspire, film, and the Evergreen and Food Desert tweak. There's a couple other pieces of legislation I'll mention as well. And then among the things in the budget that I'll talk about, we have some really exciting new initiatives around the Urban Investment Fund, funding to support Atlantic City directly, funding to support a new green fund, some funding to support inclusive growth, employee ownership, that stems from the work of the Governor's Wealth Disparity Task Force, and then funding to support a really important arts museum project in Jersey City. And I'll go through these things in a bit more detail. So starting with bills. So offshore wind, the governor signed this bill on July 7th, as the chairman mentioned, in Paulsboro, in the shadow of these giant monopiles. This principally allows Ørsted's first project, Ocean Wind 1, to proceed. It also requires them to invest $200 million of incremental cash into New Jersey's wind infrastructure. It's important. There's a lot of misunderstanding about this bill, and that's okay, but there is no New Jersey taxpayer or New Jersey ratepayer impact to this bill. This simply allows federal tax benefits provided by the Biden administration to actually build on offshore wind tax credits that were first offered by the Trump administration to flow to projects in New Jersey just like they're going to flow to projects in other states. So this keeps us in a leadership position. I still think we've got a puncher's chance to be number one here. Had this not happened, I would have downgraded that expectation quite a bit. We would not be talking about signing a lease with Ørsted in a few minutes. This is a game changer. And again, it can't be understated, the incremental impact from offshore wind potentially as a job creation matter. It's deeply important for our energy framework. It's deeply important for our environment and climate change and all that. Those are great. Sign me up. I'm all for it. From an economic perspective and a job creation perspective, there's no bigger opportunity to create net new jobs, overwhelmingly union jobs, good middle class or better jobs than offshore wind. And had we not had the legislature and the governor not come together on this, I think we'd be looking at a much cloudier outcome vis-a-vis offshore wind. And so we're grateful to the governor and his leadership and tip of the cap to the governor's office and George Helmy in particular for leading the charge on getting the legislation adopted and enacted and passed in both chambers. So deeply, deeply important and excited about that. Next slide, please. Aspire. So Aspire is an existing program. We've got two approvals for your consideration in a few minutes, but there are some mid-flight adjustments being made to Aspire as well. We'll be back with some new permanent rules sometime probably in fall around this. The program continues to exist and operate, obviously, a couple minutes, seeking your approval to support junior projects. But Aspire, a couple quirks of it or a couple things that needed tweaking. One, it has hard dollar project caps, which were written pre-inflation. So they were sort of a dead letter from the amount of money that could be going to support projects. There was a hard dollar cap. This tweaks that and enhances those caps. It extends the program to 2029, giving some more certainty to the market. Permits and requires us to establish really strong affordability controls. So if we say we're going to create 20% of the units are going to be affordable, or 100% of some projects, it gives us the authority to make sure that those are done the right way. We can talk about Dr. 6 Hours, the Affordable Housing Dimensions of this I'll spare you the details of it, but and most importantly, from an output perspective, from a so what perspective, you know, we've seen five or six approvals so far under the Aspire program. One is the only one of those is commercial, which is the Helix project in New Brunswick. Of five residential projects, those have been overwhelmingly affordable housing projects, which is great. We love it. Two more will come in your way in a few minutes. But we want to see more market rate, commercial, mixed use coming, and this will enable that as well. It also increasingly dials up the support for the what are called the GRMs, government restricted municipalities, which is a distinction that applies to Patterson, Trenton, and Atlantic City. And so hopefully we'll see more projects coming through those three cities, which can really benefit from the investment. Next slide, please. Film, another big one. So the film industry is obviously booming in New Jersey. Not right this very minute with what's going on with the strikes and such, but there's been, in 2022, a record amount of film production and TV production, $650 million, supporting 8,500 jobs in New Jersey. And we think that's kind of just warming up. This bill enhances in a number of different ways our approach to film as an EDA matter, just as a sort of ministerial thing. It moves the Motion Picture and Television Commission into the EDA. That'll be effective sometime in September. That'll be part of the family here. It extends the tax credit program to 2039. We now have the most long-lived tax credit program in America. That's important because duration and predictability of the program is critical to the ability of folks to finance studios, which is what we really want, is long-term brick-and-mortar permanent job construction of film studios. It makes a number of important tweaks to enable and support, again, long-term film studio production with known projects in Monmouth, Essex, Hudson, Middlesex, hopefully more. Monmouth, of course, being Netflix. And importantly, this got misunderstood in some of the public dialogue about this bill. It appropriates $30 million to the EDA for the purposes of making equity investments in lease partner projects. That's not additional support to those programs. That's allowing the state to participate in the upside if we choose to. And, you know, we're providing a tremendous amount of support to this industry through these production tax credits. I think that's a good investment and prudent. But if they do really well, we want the option to participate in the upside. So we are permitted and authorized to make up to $10 million equity investments in these lease partner projects. So that, again, they do really well, we'll be along for the ride. But we can choose not to make that investment. We wouldn't bring an investment to this board if we didn't think, you know, there was, you know, good economic rationale to do so. So it's not for, it's, you know, that was misunderstood, I think, a fair bit in the press discussion about this. This is an opportunity for the state to actually benefit directly as investors in the studio, not in individual film. We're not going to be making, you know, we're not investing in, you know, Barbie 2 or Oppenheimer 3 or whatever. Though that would be great.
You might want to.
We get a taste of those. Those would be good ones to get in on, right? Yeah. But in the studio production facility, that we'd also be participant in the economics of that. Last slide. Next slide, please. Thank you. So Evergreen, we're doing some Evergreen work in a few minutes as well. We're back with four more approvals, requested approvals for fund managers. Some tweaks to Evergreen, which is going really well. It broadens who can purchase tax credits, primarily to folks who pay the insurance premium tax, which is a fair number of folks, and it broadens that. It also gives us the authority. You know, the statute says that we can sell these things for no less than 75 cents on the dollar, auction them for no less than 75 cents on the dollar. In any auction, you'd like to have as much upward pricing pressure as you can. It gives us the ability to actually go higher than that in any given auction. If we think the market conditions are really good, maybe we'll say the next auction is a minimum of 85 or 90. We might say 75. Who knows where we are when we're doing that. But it gives us the authority to say, if you want in, you've got to bid at least X above 75%. There's also literally a one-word tweak to the Food Desert program, which takes a lot of timing pressure off the auction of Food Desert tax credits. Changing the word from approved to closed, is that the right word, whatever it was before? So that this board can approve them sometime later this year. They don't have to close later this year before. Bradley, is that right? Did I get that right? Thanks, Bradley. So then we were going to be kind of white knuckle driving down the calendar to get to that milestone, and it's a one-word tweak that allows that to happen. So a bit of a simplification effort there. Last slide, then I'll pause for questions on bills. Our sister, cousin, whatever, sibling agency, Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology, had an important bill that enabled them to make grants to professors at higher education institutions, which is really important as we think about the commercialization activities at Rutgers, Rowan, you know, JIT, various other public institutions. It's a bit of a tweak to that. and enables that. The governor just 9 days ago around the corner at Henry J. Austin here in Trenton signed a bill creating a establishing the New Jersey Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center Act and creating a new authority. We're on the board, as are a number of other agencies from around the state, to support and drive forward the maternal health agenda that First Lady Tammy Murphy has been driving since day one of the administration and the multi-agency effort. I would appropriate some money to that as well. There's money in our budget to support the construction of that facility, which I'll talk about in a moment. But a really important milestone for addressing the terrible scourge, particularly the disparity between Black and Latino moms and the statewide average for maternal and infant health mortality outcomes. Tragedy and a crisis that plays out in real time every single day, aggressively here in Trenton and all across the state. And then finally, the governor was in Fort Lee on, was in Fort Lee on Friday. The big news there was more to do with congestion pricing than signing up this bill. That being said, an important bill was signed. Aaron and the team at Treasury are very big partners in working on in the development of this to support essentially tax fairness for how folks who live in New Jersey and used to work in someplace else and now work from home would get taxed. There's up to $2 billion potentially of state revenue on the line for this. The lion's share of the activity and the work to be done on that is Treasury's and the tax code and taxations. To be done, we have great partners in this, but we were appropriated $35 million to create a new grant program. We'll come to this board for consideration when it's ready, to encourage companies to do the right thing and essentially tag their employees who have been working from their kitchen table in Bergen County or whatever, who used to go to Manhattan every day, as New Jersey employees that they pay taxes to New Jersey because they're no longer consuming the services in New York City. Not in New York City, but if they're working in New Jersey, they should pay taxes in New Jersey. And this creates a framework for that and an incentive for companies to do that. So I'll pause there. We haven't gotten to the budget yet. Questions, comments, thoughts on legislation and various bills? Again, we'll be back with rules on film. We'll be back with rules on Spire. We have to do rules on Evergreen. I don't think we do. No rules on Evergreen. We're good there. We'll be back with program proposals for the resident tax credit thing sometime late this year, early next year, something like that. Inhale and exhale a handful of times. Okay, good. Next slide, please. Let's go through the budget real quick. So as the chairman mentioned, again, a continued extraordinary outcome. I think the budget the governor signed makes historic investments in any number of fronts. One of them I mentioned, of course, is the economy and economic growth. I won't go through all these in any detail at all. You'll hear about lots of them as they come back for consideration. I'll just flag a few that are highlighted here. Things in blue are new. Things in gray are either the same or maybe in some cases slightly less funding, but continuations of existing funding efforts. Main Street, I'll mention off the bat, this is the fourth consecutive $50 million appropriation to the Main Street program, which brings that total, I'm not very good at math, to slightly above $200 million. That so vastly exceeds the prior amount of appropriations to support small businesses. It's sort of an unfair comparison. It was basically zero. The EDA got zero appropriations for 10 or 15 years prior to support small business, and now $200 million, four consecutive $50 million appropriations. That continues to make a huge difference in things. The lease grant program, the improvement grant program, the micro-business loan program, so that allows those programs to continue and rock and roll. New program, this is mentioned in the governor's State of the State or budget address, I forget which one. Urban Investment Fund, really trying to support our cities that are still grappling with the fallout of remote work and hybrid work and different sort of commercial office space use, and trying to have initiatives to and investments to bring more people back downtown or stay downtown or come out at night to eat and drink and hang out and see a show or whatever. So, again, details to come on that. That's federally funded. That has to be committed by the end of calendar 24. More money for strategic innovation centers, some funding to support the Maternal and Infant Health Center, up to $30 million, and that 50 is soft-circled for the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center. A green fund to help catalyze, continued investments in clean energy, particularly things like building decarbonization. That's most likely to be a financing tool. It could also be a match for federal funds, of which there are many, many available. We've gotten the opportunity to work on the Atlantic, the efforts to continue to make Atlantic City stronger and recovering from both COVID and its historical challenges. So $30 million of federal funding to support things in Atlantic City. Again, Jersey City funding that we will ultimately grant, and this board will have to approve a grant to the Jersey City Redevelopment Agency around the Pompidou Center. Again, that's a project that continues to get sort of speculate some noise on that project. great states, great cities have great culture. And this is an opportunity to really strengthen and make more robust Jersey City's arts and culture scene. And I think it's a great investment that I'm excited for us to be working on. More money for child care facilities, a bit of a reprogramming of some old money, but that's doing business as new money to support, continue to support the child care facilities effort. Manufacturing, another $20 million to support that. We actually just announced you'd given us the authority to roll that out as soon as we got it. We have rolled out some of that, and we'll do back for another round of our manufacturing voucher program in the fall. Next slide, please. Again, just a couple quick hits here. The wealth disparity initiative, again, the governor convened a task force 2 years ago on trying to narrow and eliminate the racial wealth gap in New Jersey. We've been a part of that work. I'm a member, Michelle and Tara and others have been great colleagues working on that. We've been appropriated $6 million to do some pilot-scale programs around things like employee ownership. That could be looking at ESOPs, that could be looking at a number of different ways to sort of encourage enterprise formation and wealth formation through employee ownership. We've also gotten another $5 million to support arts and innovation. $3 million of that is FOSTER, explicitly circled in the budget for NJPAC to do another iteration of North Shore, which was really successful in June this year. Jen and the Wind Institute team got another $5 million to support their work around training and workforce development and R&D in wind. We're continuing the Small Business Bonding Readiness Program, which we do in partnership with the African American Chamber and the Statewide Hispanic Chamber. So continuing on a lot of different fronts. Importantly, too, I skipped over it, there's a $10 million allocation to the EDA for business attraction and marketing. We'll be using that proprietarily for things like marketing the film industry, marketing our programs, marketing particularly our small business programs to get the word out. There are hundreds of thousands of small businesses. We reach as many as we can with shoe leather, but radio and digital ads and other things will help with that as well. Next slide, I think I've done that. And then a couple other things here and there. The difference between Terry's numbers and my numbers there's about $120 million of what are essentially pass-through items for old programs for debt service on bonds that show up in our budget. So all told, including the $65 million for film and the tax fairness bill, $545 million and a little bit more come in the EDA's way, now in the EDA's coffers to support tons of initiatives. So, we'll continue to be really busy, and we'll continue to have a lot to do, and this board will continue to have no shortage of things for its consideration over the, you know, months and years to come. We're still working through things we've got appropriated a couple years ago, so this continues to kind of refill the to-do list. The good news is lots of this is continuing things we've already stood up and made progress on, and I think we'll look to model things like the Urban Investment Fund on things we've already done so that, you know, we can use those typologies and those things we've already sort of done the hard work of standing up. But we continue to have a lot to do. This is very exciting. We're deeply grateful for the governor's support, the legislators' support, the sponsors of all those bills. I can start naming names. I'll be here all day, but they're great sponsors of each of those pieces of legislation. Obviously, the budget chairs in both chambers, Senator Sarlo and Senator Pinter Marin, special shouts for their support for all the budget items. And Brownie, a great brother in one case. Sure, Eliana's got a great family, too. Really appreciative of the support, and again, we'll be busy for a good long while, which is good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions or comments, sir?
Questions, comments from the board? I thought it was important just for Tim to walk us through this because it's good news, bad news, right? Good news a lot, and bad news is you have a lot of work to do. So we'll continue to get at it. I'm going to go through some committee reports, and I just want to remind people in general, I know the board knows this quite well, that a lot of the work gets done in committee. Everything that we review here at the board meeting first goes to one of our various committees, and I certainly thank the board members for their service and the staff for their service in reporting, because there's a lot of work that gets done before this meeting. So I'm going to give two reports. The first is the Audit Committee report. The Audit Committee met on July 12th and discussed a number of matters, including the financial updates for the first quarter of 2023, which is positive. In addition, staff briefed the members of the committee on the status of external audits being conducted by the State Auditor and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Office of Davis-Bacon and Labor Standards. The NJEDA's Accountability Officer also provided an update. The Accountability Officer serves as NJEDA's primary liaison to the Governor's Disaster Recovery Office and to the Office of the State Controller, and is responsible for overseeing the responsible disbursement of COVID recovery funds and the administration of COVID recovery programs. A report was provided on the work of the integrity oversight monitors engaged pursuant to Executive Order 166 and the statewide COVID-19 compliance plan. Additionally, the internal auditor reported to the committee in accordance with Executive Order 122. Staff provided the committee with a rulemaking update on the status of rules in place, recently approved, and the pipeline for future rule updates. Staff also reported on the program evaluation report required by the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. The report evaluated the Brownfield Redevelopment Incentive Program, the Aspire Program, and the Emerge Program. The report has been included in the board package under FYI materials. Staff provided the committee with its quarterly portfolio review and risk report. And finally, the staff reported updates on litigation, claims, and complaints. I'm also now going to give a summary of the policy committee meeting, which occurred on July 12th. The policy committee began with a venture recommendation to approve four additional qualified venture fund firms under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program, including Covenant Venture Capital, Edison Partners Management, Newark Venture Accelerator, and RV3 Management. I should note that Aisha Glover and I recused from any review and discussion on the recommendation regarding the Newark Venture Accelerator, and we will both be recusing on the vote regarding this item before the board today. Staff presented a memo to the committee regarding a proposed loan subordination. However, the committee, following the committee, it was determined that this item would not be proceeding to the July board meeting. Under the next section of the agenda, under authority matters, staff presented the members with a request to extend the contract with McKinsey for consulting services in support of work being done in support of the Creating Helpful Incentives to Produce Semiconductors, CHIPS, and Science Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act, or the IRA, and we'll hear about that today. Next, staff presented a request for the board to approve matching funds for an application for USEDA's Tech Hubs grant and an MOU between the authority and Rutgers. This was followed by a request to the board to approve cost-share funds for the U.S. DOE's Centers of Excellence application and an MOU also between the authority and Rutgers. Moving forward, the next section of the committee agenda focused on the New Jersey Windport. Staff briefed the committee on the status of the NJ Windport project, which was followed by the presentation of three memos for the board's consideration, including a construction services agreement with Atlantic City Electric, a license for the NJDOT for dredging-related activities, and a development agreement and sublease agreement with Ørsted, all of which we'll be discussing today. Lastly, staff presented the committee with two FYI memos falling under legal affairs, reporting on decisions made under delegated authority over the past year as it relates to MOUs and legal reviews. So as you can see, and we'll give a report a little bit later on the Incentives Committee, a lot of work gets done before this meeting. Now we'll move to action items for today. The first category will be venture. There will be one presentation on four firms recommended for approval, followed by four individual votes. And Alexander is going to give us a presentation today.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be with you today to present our recommendations for this month's proposed qualified venture firms, also known as QVFs, under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund program. QVFs are eligible to apply for funding from the Evergreen Fund to make qualified investments in eligible high-growth, innovative New Jersey businesses and to gain support and insight from interactions with the program's advisory board. QVF designations are made on a rolling basis, and applications are reviewed in the order in which they are received. The application period for venture firms will remain open throughout the life of the program. Thus far, the EDA has received 13 applications and has previously approved three qualified venture firms. The Venture Programs Department is presenting an additional four qualified venture firms for approval today. Following staff review, the recommendations offered here today have met all program eligibility requirements and minimum scoring requirements as determined by the EDA's Venture Programs Department in conjunction with the EDA's Product Operations Department and Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Department. The four qualified venture firm applicants recommended for certification today are Covenant Venture Capital, LLC, a New York City-based venture capital firm with fund strategies investing in AI-enabled companies and life sciences and technology companies, scoring 18 out of 30 possible points. Edison Partners Management, LLC, a New Jersey-based investment firm scoring 34 out of 37 possible points. The EDA is a limited partner in seven Edison funds with a relationship dating back to 1995. Newark Venture Accelerator, LLC, doing business as Newark Venture Partners, a New Jersey-based early-stage venture capital firm scoring 30 out of 37 possible points. The EDA is a limited partner in Newark Venture Partners' first two funds. And finally, RV3 Management, LLC, doing business as Rittenhouse Ventures, a Pennsylvania-based early growth stage investment firm scoring 25 out of 30 points. QPF applicants that meet all program minimum requirements as outlined in the memorandum are scored based on the program's weighted criteria evaluation model, which was approved by the Board of the Authority in April 2022 and is made publicly available on the program website and in Appendix A of the cover memorandum. The evaluation methodology places a material emphasis on firms' diversity, equity, and inclusion policies and track record of progress towards policy goals, which is independently evaluated by the EDA's DE&I department. As previously approved by the Board of the Authority, the model incorporates dynamic scoring. Venture firms that have had a robust DE&I policy in place for at least 1 year face an increased maximum score and minimum required score. These firms may demonstrate progress towards their policy goals to earn additional points in the scoring model. This month, both Edison Partners and Newark Venture Partners have had policies in place for at least 1 year. Encouragingly, both firms were able to demonstrate progress towards their policy goals as evaluated by the EDA's DE&I department. Notably, nearly 60% of Newark Venture Partners portfolio companies are founded by women or people of color, and Edison Partners has already met its Fund 10 goal of investing $30 to $50 million into women or black-led companies. Both Covenant Venture Capital and Rittenhouse Ventures have created formalized DE&I policies within the past year. Covenant formalized their DE&I policy as a result of their program application, demonstrating the program's ability to catalyze increased efforts around DE&I within the innovation ecosystem. Staff plans to continue to present additional QBFs for approval on a regular basis throughout the life of the program as we seek to build a pipeline of engaged venture capital partners to invest in high-growth New Jersey businesses. I'll conclude my prepared remarks by reiterating staff's recommendation for approval of the four applicants as qualified venture firms, which shall be approved under separate votes for each applicant. Thank you for your consideration, and I welcome any questions at this time.
I said two great minutes to Alexander's excellent presentation. One, just a reminder, there's no money being invested here. This is essentially giving folks a membership card in the Evergreen Club. Pretty exclusive. It's growing as a club. They'll be back when they have deals, and you'll be understanding what they're investing in and where, if and where our money's going anywhere.
And it's an investment in a specific deal, not in a fund.
That's correct. We may be back, for example, if Newark is raising money for their third fund, we could be back in consideration, be an LP in that, but that's separate from Evergreen. Just to address maybe one concern, there's both as a New York firm and as a Philly firm here, you might say, what are we doing with out-of-state firms? That's actually a good thing, because that means they're going to bring their money here and invest in New Jersey companies. So that is a good thing to both be supporting New Jersey firms, two of which we have here, and out-of-state firms as well, because that means money comes here, and we're in favor of that.
Mr. Chairman, Phil Elagia has joined.
Hey, welcome, Phil. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Just out of curiosity, how much Edison Capital have we invested in?
How much we into Edison Park?
Round number.
I'm sorry. How much do we have in Edison? I mean, a lot of it's come back.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, so EDA has been investing, I'm sorry, several other director of Edison programs. EDA has been investing with Edison for across five different funds over nearly two decades now. So across multiple different funds, it's probably about $15 million in that area.
Last check, we did three in the last fund, is that right?
Four.
Yeah, there's seven funds actually predate. So we started out kind of $2 to $3 million average size of investment and have gone up to four, but we're revolving those funds.
My policy, we can never be more than 1% of innovative fund, is that right? 10% of this fund, sorry.
And to your point, most of it's come back already.
Okay, so I think we're going to proceed with the vote on each individually. Any other questions, comments from the board?
Chairman, it's Phil Elagia. I have to recuse myself from Newark Venture Capital. The county's helping them or worked with them on some stuff as well, Dan and Vaughn. So I'm going to recuse myself.
Thank you, Phil. I think there are three of us who will now be recused from that. So let's do Covenant first. Could I ask for a motion to approve Covenant as a qualified venture firm under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program? A motion to approve?
Robert Shimkin.
Thank you. Second?
Swirler, second.
Any other discussion? None being heard. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No recusals or abstentions. Okay, let's move to Edison. A motion to approve Edison Partners Management as a qualified venture firm under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program. Motion to approve.
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No recusals or abstentions. Okay, and let's approve RV3 Management as a qualified venture firm under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program. Motion to approve.
Fred Dumont, motion.
Fred, second. Robert Shimkin. Thank you, Robert. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Okay, and then I've asked Vice Chairman Sarlo to lead the board through the next vote. Given my recusal, again, my family foundation is an investor in Newark Venture Partners, I believe, Aisha, and we've heard Phil will also recuse on this item.
Second, Mr. Chairman. Wait a quick note. Can we have a quorum still?
Yes.
Minus the three. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. So it's to approve the Newark Venture Accelerator as a qualified venture firm under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program. Do I have a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Second?
Fred Dumont, second.
Fred. Any discussions or questions? Okay, except for those recusals on the record. All in favor?
Aye.
Any notes? None. Motion passes.
Thank you, Charles. We're now going to move to authority matters. And first, Emma will present on the extension of consulting services for TIFs and IRA support.
Good morning. The members of the board are asked to approve the extension of a contract with McKinsey & Company for consulting services in support of the Creating Helpful Incentives to Produce Semiconductors, CHIPS and Science Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act, known as the IRA. The extended contract will provide an additional 5 months of application support, totaling $4,768,225. In April of 2023, the NJEDA board approved entering into a 12-week contract with McKinsey, where the firm was tasked with reviewing the CHIPS and IRA packages to determine how New Jersey can best leverage the funding opportunities made available under both programs. During that time, McKinsey analyzed all 140-plus programs across CHIPS and IRA and determined several areas for New Jersey with high right-to-win potential. Those areas translate into approximately $20 billion in funding for the state, comprised of $1.5 billion in competitive grants and $17.5 billion in tax credit and financing opportunities. Of that $20 billion universe, the state is most poised to win across 20 opportunities for competitive grant funding, focused on manufacturing, clean energy production and transmission, climate change resilience, conservation of natural resources, the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, and the financing of clean energy and technological innovation. To date, McKinsey has been working alongside staff from the EEA, the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, NJBPU, the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, NJDEP, and the Governor's Office to coordinate, draft, and complete 14 applications prior to October 5th. Those 14 applications alone account for $67.6 billion in available funding, of which New Jersey has the right to win $997 million. An additional six applications will trail by year's end, totaling nearly $400 million. For New Jersey. Due to the significant amount of funding with high right to win potential coming online between now and the end of the year, the authority seeks to extend McKinsey's contract in order to continue the current support model, which includes application support, meeting coordination and cadence, market fit analysis, and drafting of materials due to the continued demand and limited staffing bandwidth across all agencies to further the work without the presence of a consultant. McKinsey's scope of work for an additional 5 months of consulting services includes the following. Application support and economic modeling via McKinsey fly teams on high-priority applications, maximizing incentive uptake through 1 to 2 industry-given opportunities, assistance to municipalities applying to non-state applications, program management support in which McKinsey onboards 2 subcontractors, their 17A and Indelible, for day-to-day operations, and broadband support for the BPU's finalization of New Jersey's Broadband Equity Access and Deployment, the BEAD 5-year action plan, under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. McKinsey has determined the total cost of this work is $4,768,225. For the completed 12-week contract with McKinsey, the authority was reimbursed to the American Rescue Plan Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds for the total cost of $2,468,400. Since that funding source is no longer a viable option, the authority is also requesting delegated authority for the EDA Chief Executive Officer to accept money from the BPU for up to the full amount of contract extensions cost to EDA. In exchange for their financial contribution, the BPU requested that the expanded scope with McKinsey also feature broadband support for the BEAD program, since that application is due in a month, which is reflected in the updated scope of work. Additionally, since McKinsey's contract ended last Friday, yet several applications are due between now and the end of September, 13 in total of those 14. Staff is requesting delegated authority today, so there's no delay in progress on current and upcoming applications. Authority staff has started discussions with and received confirmation from the BPU on splitting costs for contract extension, of which NJEDA will continue to serve as the contract manager throughout the duration of services. With that, we ask for approval to extend McKinsey's contract for 5 months of support at $4,768,225 and approve delegated authority for the EDA CEO to enter into an MOU with BPU for payments. With that, I'll open it up to any questions if folks have any.
We do have a question.
Okay.
Once they review the application for funding, does it come back to the EDA for approval for those funds to be led to companies that are looking for it?
Yes, we got to go get the funds first, and then how we disperse them come here. So if we're successful in, Doug will talk about a specific one in a moment, if we're successful in getting some money under the TechNods program, yeah, that'll come back here for us to program, for
and
like a better word.
It's a pass-through from the federal government for the fund, which is a project, or either the IRA or the CHIPS Act?
It depends on the source. So some that are industry incentive, like they're incentive-based, yes, pass-through, but for the competitive grant funding, it's programmatic.
Yeah.
Most of them. So
you might get a check for $20 to run a program to do something, or DEP or
BPU
might get funding, to, like we have with SSPCI, for example.
You know, if it's going to be a passage, they're going to follow the same rules from the federal government with a purchase language and Davis Bacon or prevailing wage.
Yeah, they would be subject to, that's in both packages, the requirements that folks would be subject to if they receive funding.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions? So just again, to be clear, the first $2 million we already spent was funded through the Recovery Act.
Correct. Yeah. Reimbursement.
And this second $4.7 million, we will split with the BPU, or?
There'll be an overwhelming majority investor in this exercise. Okay.
They have a lot of applications coming from this package, which is
what we're doing in cooperation with them. We're the manager for the program.
Correct. And there's a lot for us, there's a lot for BP, there's a lot for DEP. I don't speak for Elizabeth, but BPU has agreed to. We haven't formalized the document, which is why we're having delegated authority to do it, but up to the whole. It might not be a little mess. We've been looking for something.
When do you think these awards will be made?
That's a great question. I mean, it really depends on the application.
Because, look, I think the interesting thing, and this is a great, you know, we should sort of flag this and say, okay, the March meeting, let's look back and see how successful this was, right? Because it's a lot of money.
Most that are due by September have a quarter one, quarter two of 2024 award draft date.
There's a lot of money at stake. We're also spending a lot of money to get it, right? So it'll be interesting to look at the risk return or return on investment or whatever we want to call it.
Yeah, we will do that for sure.
And on the interagency coordination piece, to stress it, having these folks on has been incredible. We have a standing meeting every Monday with every agency that's involved in this contract, and we look at the week, we look at the applications. Their folks are coordinating and corralling the working groups that our teams sit on. It's really all-time high brain trust working
through
on every single
state
application.
Through,
yes.
Through the state across.
And that's BPU, DEP, EDA, Governor's Office, and then as applications go to the labor component, DOL sits on it, DCA will sit on it. We pull folks in as needed, but those are the core groups.
Okay. Any questions? I lost my script. The motion will be to approve the extension of the consulting services for CHIPS and IRA support for a one-year term. Any further discussion? Did I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko.
Thank you, Robert. A second?
Second.
Thank you, Marcia.
Any further discussion? None being heard. All in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? All right. Approved. Thank you. Next, Doug York, Policy Advisor on Matching Funds for One Applicant for the U.S. EDA Tech Hub Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This follows directly on the material that Emma was offering before. This is a program coming out of the CHIPS Act from the U.S. Economic Development Administration called the Innovation Tax Hub. And the intent of the Tax Hub program is to create within regions of the country the significant density and concentration of leadership and technology areas such that over the course of the 5 to 10 year life of the program, the United States can grow global leadership, global competitive positions in these technology areas. There are two phases of the program. The first phase is what we're dealing with now, and that is for either the designation of a region as a global technology, as a national technology hub, and or a grant of $400,000 to prepare for the ultimate application for the significant funds that will come in the secondary part. It is that first phase that we're in. The $400,000 investment by the U.S. EDA requires a local match of 20% or $100,000, and that's the subject of what we're dealing with today. At the leadership of Judith Schaft from NJCSIT and others, there was a very collaborative process engaging probably 35 or 40 folks from the various universities around the state to address where should we be focusing our attention? Where does New Jersey have the competitive strength to be named a tech hub? With the guidance of McKinsey, we settled in on a consensus of two applications, one of those applications being for the advanced pharmaceutical manufacturing field, and the second one for the field of photonics. The focus today is on the advanced manufacturing, pharma manufacturing, because that piece is looking for both designation and strategic support funding, requiring a match from the state. I'll tell you a little bit about the photonics one, which is just an FYI. So the long-term potential here, as you can see, is a investment by the federal government of $50 to $75 million to, in essence, help grow the fund, to move. They're basically saying we want to look at a place where there are resources and where those resources would not come together without the federal funding in a way that would create global leadership. So I don't expect a lot of these tech hubs to go to New York City or to go to Los Angeles or to go to Silicon Valley. Those are places where those resources are already consolidated into leadership positions. So the request to the board here is for two things. One, the $100,000 match, which is a local match, and an MOU with Rutgers to essentially govern the administration of that match. Just briefly, FYI, the Princeton application is for the field of photonics. That is the industrial use of light. It turns out, by virtue of things that were done at Bell Labs years ago and Sarnoff Research Institute, we have a significant amount of photonics activity here in New Jersey, despite the fact that it's kind of one of those things that most people are unaware of. All of your cell phones, all of the computers that you're using, all of this involves photonics in some way, and we have a leadership role in that. And the same group that won the National Science Foundation Award for photonics, led by Princeton, is applying with an expanded group for this tech hub. So again, the ask is for the Rutgers-led proposal, a consortium that I'm guessing is sort of 35 or 40 organizations around the state representing workforce development, academia, industry. It's a significantly industry-driven program. It's not a research-driven program, and obviously government entities such as ourselves. I'll stop there. Any questions?
Got one. When will you hear?
We expect to hear, I'm guessing, sort of November, and the reason that becomes important is because the phase two NOFO, Notice of Funding Opportunity, is expected out before the end of the year. So we will be back again with probably requests in response to the final funding.
Just again, if you can report to the board on the success of the program,
sure.
Assuming it's approved.
Doug, I have a question. So the 20% match is not the driver for to max out at the 400,000. Seems our 20% match of 100,000 is not the driver to get the maximum 400,000 grant.
No.
What are the other criteria?
In terms of the match?
No, to get the max 400,000.
I think the way the thing is structured, you can apply for less than 400,000, so obviously the commensurate reduction in the match, but Rutgers has put together a proposal that requires the full 400, and that is... building an ecosystem that creates a team that can then apply for the second phase of this, building a consortium, kind of reaching out into the particularly the educational community and the workforce community to build partnerships there. It's kind of readiness. It's money to sort of get you ready to apply for the final funding.
Your question, where is the other 300,000 coming from?
No. What's the criteria? What criteria? 400,000. Seems like that's what we're applying for.
Right.
Right. Initially, I thought if we matched the 20%, we would get the max, but that doesn't seem to be the
case. Oh, I think it's the other way around. I think it's Rutgers applies for the max, US EDA says you deserve the max, and then we write a check for the 100.
It's a 1-4. So our 100 maximizes the 400K. And the strategy planning grant is to help advance the initiative for the advanced manufacturing. The reason we're not doing it on the photonics side is because there was an NSF engines grant there, as Doug mentioned, to Princeton. That application and coalition is more formed than the advanced manufacturing one. The advanced manufacturing one is going to build off of a lot of the work a professor at Rutgers has done in the engineering school, but hopefully to onshore the development of pharmaceuticals in New Jersey and help on national security relative to that and help address a lot of the drug shortages that many folks are reading about in the news today as well.
Thank you. We don't have to learn a lot more about what photonics is if we were going to dig into that one. Only Doug knows what really photonics is. It's in our book.
Do I have another hour or two to go on about photonics?
No, you do not. Okay, any further questions, discussion from the board? And I'm being heard. The request is to approve matching funds to support Rutgers' advanced pharmaceutical manufacturing application to the US EDA's Regional Technology and Innovation Hub Program for a strategy development grant and an MOU between the NJEDA and Rutgers State University of New Jersey addressing the mutual understanding of each party's support for the application. May I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Chimko.
Thank you.
Second?
Second, Mike.
Thank you. Now, further discussion, may I hear a vote? All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Recusals or abstentions? Being heard, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
The next presentation will be on the WINS Institute, and Lloyd will present.
Morning.
Morning.
Members of the board have requested to approve $250,000 in cost share funding to support Rutgers University on an application to the U.S. Department of Energy to create an offshore wind-focused centers of excellence. Rutgers is leading the application process on behalf of a multi-state consortium of universities, research labs, and public agencies. The requested cost share will utilize funding from the $5 million grant agreement between the authority and the New Jersey Department of Treasury signed on February 24th of 2023 to support WIN Institute for innovation and training related activities. The cost share will only be provided if the DOE awards funding to Rutgers for this project. And to be eligible for this award, the DOE requires a cost share of at least 20% of the total project costs from non-federal sources. The authority's contribution will help the consortium meet the cost share eligibility requirement. DOE Centers of Excellences are hubs of subject matter expertise within specific focus areas that conduct research, provide insight, and develop best practices and innovative solutions. Through this funding opportunity, USDOE will seed 1 to 2 university-led centers of excellences. The anticipated minimum award size for any one individual award is $2.875 million. Rutgers submitted a concept paper titled Enabling Multidisciplinary Pathways in Offshore Wind Education and Research, also known as Empower, the DOE on June 8th of 2023. On July 5th, Rutgers received notification from the DOE that they were supported and encouraged to submit a full application that is due on August 28th. The requested cost share must be verifiable before Rutgers submits this application on August 28th. The Empower project will focus on education and workforce development and overcome the challenges of environmentally aware offshore wind farm design and deployment, energy transmission, and support equitable prosperity through regional collaboration. If funded, the Empower Center of Excellence will establish an Academy of Wind Energy to provide multidisciplinary master's degrees in offshore wind energy. Empower will later develop into a 501c3 nonprofit organization supported by a consortium membership model that uses the initial USDOE funding award as a seed funding. The Centers of Excellence opportunity aligns closely with the mission of the NJEDA, specific to the Wind Institute efforts to support offshore wind workforce development and an innovative education and training curriculum. This request is for the board approval of the $250,000 cost share funding and the MOU between the authority and Rutgers University on a Department of Energy Offshore Wind Centers of Excellence opportunity. Thank you for your consideration in this matter, and I will open it up to questions.
I take it this has already started, this is a power coalition.
Correct.
When do you think it will be up and running?
So the expectation is DOE will render their decision in Q4 of this year. So I think you can anticipate immediately following that. So Q1 of next year would be a rough timeline of when this program would be starting to take off. But the actual physical output, which will be a virtual network of curriculum throughout these institutions, would be more so later in next year. There's no fine timeline on that. As it develops, the curriculum will further change.
And that curriculum would be shared between all the universities.
Correct. Yeah, it will be provided.
Standardized
curriculum. Exactly. That's the main output of this, is the standardization of curriculum to be used regionally. So it's supporting regional growth of offshore wind opportunity.
I think, like we've asked with the other requests, it would be good to have a report back on the success of the grant.
So would the, and you may not know the answer to this, but so would the, this academy or the curriculum be the same for all these participating higher ed institutions, or would, if you wanted to enroll, would you go either virtually or in person to this or this course there? Like, would we be, would Rutgers be competing with these, even though we're a consortium going after this federal grant, at the end of the day, are we then competing for students to join the Rutgers curriculum versus another, or is it going to be multidisciplinary across all the higher
ed? It'll be multidisciplinary across the universities. The idea is that each university brings subject matter expertise to the table, whether it be environmental, engineering, or power electronics, and the master's students in their specific programs have an opportunity to expand their views and educational opportunity based on the subject matter expertise of the other universities. So it'll be collaborative.
Okay. Any other questions? Discussion? May I hear a motion to approve the, we're approving the cost-sharing funding to support Rutgers Empower application and an MOU between the NJEDA and Rutgers addressing the mutual understanding of each party's support. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Marcia.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Charles.
Thank you, Charles. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? All right, none being heard, the motion passes. Thank you. All right, I'm now going to, on behalf of Ginny, who cannot be here today, Ginny is the chair of the Incentives Committee. I'll give a quick report on the Incentives Committee meeting, which was held on July 11th, and the items
that were discussed will be under consideration today. Prior to presentation of items for the committee's consideration, staff updated the committee on recent legislative updates, particularly on changes to the Garden State Film and Digital Media Jobs Act and to the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020, with specific revisions to the NJ Aspire program. All of this Tim addressed earlier. Both legislative updates were signed into law as of July 6, 2023. Regarding the film and digital media program, some of the highlights of the legislation are that it increased the amount of tax credits the EDA can make available to New Jersey film lease production companies and to New Jersey studio partners annually, and modifies various lease program requirements for New Jersey film lease production companies and NJ studio partners. The Economic Recovery Act of 2020 was also modified as it relates to the Aspire program to increase the amount of tax credits certain projects may be eligible to receive, subject to program requirements, and revises various program requirements. Tim again addressed this. Staff presented three Aspire projects to the committee for consideration. Following committee, it was determined that one of the Aspire projects would not be proceeding to the July board. Two Aspire projects will be considered today. The 728th Street Union City Project and the Terrell Redevelopment Partners Urban Renewal Project, which will be considered in a few moments. In addition, staff presented one film tax credit application for Viacom International and one digital media tax credit application for Audible, which are being presented for the board's consideration today. My family owns some stock in Paramount, the parent company of Viacom, so to avoid any appearance of conflict, I'll be recusing from that consideration. The final voting matter considered was a modification of a Grow Project Singer New York LLC, which we will consider today. Lastly, staff advised the members of the committee of a new milestone reached relating to the Legacy Grow program. There are no additional Grow projects that require certification beyond the product certifications that are already in queue. With that, we're going to now turn to the specific items for consideration today. First, on Aspire, Kevin will present. I guess to remind everybody, and hopefully for committee board members on the phone, we have, before we consider each of these, we sort of have a slide that gives us a quick reminder of what the program is and what the project is.
Thank you, Terry. So before I start, I'll just highlight a note that's in both of the memos. So in light of Tim's remarks and then the chairman just shared, the legislation that passed in the beginning of July substantially changed the caps and some of the obligations that are required by the statute, but these projects are all being approved under the caps that were in place prior to that legislation and subject to the rules prior to that legislation, and so that's been acknowledged by the applicants and it's reflective in the analysis, so it doesn't have any of the increased caps or...
And in fact, one of the reasons that the third project dropped is because...
Right, so there's kind of...
like the New Deal better.
Yeah, the legislation may lay out at least three swim lanes, and there's ever-emerging swim lanes, so it's kind of... we're working diligently with the marketplace to kind of sort out the path forward, so we have two that have found a swim lane, and we're hoping to find more swim lanes as soon as possible. So... we are seeking your approval to award up to $25,069,387 in Aspire tax credits to a residential 55 and over 100% affordable housing project that will also include a ground floor retail component in Union City, Hudson County. The project is situated at 728th Street, continuing up 10th Street on a roughly 7-acre site, and the project is known as Union City Senior. So as you can see kind of here in this rendering, the project's proposing, the applicant's proposing a 6-story, 101-unit residential building, and it's on an existing surface parking lot, but it's kind of like an infill development, so all of those white, all that white massing is existing structures, and they're basically filling in the block, and kind of replacing that surface parking lot, and then backfilling it with a 2-story lot underneath the residential structure. So the applicant is 728th Street Union City LP, which is owned by a managing member LLC and an investor member LLC. Both members are controlled by Ed Martoglio, who is one of the founders and the current CEO and sole principal of Redevelopment and the RPM Development. RPM is one of the most prominent affordable and mixed-income housing developers in New Jersey, and since 1986, RPM has built more than 5,000 housing units. The co-applicant is Life Management, Inc. This entity will provide services to residents at the project. The co-applicant has worked extensively with RPM in providing services to residents in other projects. As per the program rules, Life Management meets the eligibility guidelines to be a co-applicant, and those guidelines are noted in the board memo. The board memo also gives more project details, including the rent for the affordable units. The new building will include modern amenities and will comply with HMFA's and EDA's green building standards. The total development budget for the project is $54,126,714. To help size the award, we exclude costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules. The total eligible project cost is $46,889,152. The developer must contribute at least 20% equity, or in this case, roughly $10.8 million. The equity in this project, when accounting for the for low-income housing tax credit proceeds associated with the financing and the deferred developer fee, far exceed that number at roughly $17.8 million. The sources table in the memo shows there are several other sources of debt and public funds in the deal. We subject the applicant's request to the program's various award caps. In this case, the project is eligible to receive up to 60% of total eligible costs, or $60 million, whichever is less. However, the award is also subject to a cap of 90% of total eligible costs when also factoring in this low-income housing tax credit award. In this case, that results in the lower number, and the award would be capped at $25,069,387. This calculation is further detailed in the memo. To help further size the award, we looked at the project's rate of return. In this case, we used the HMFA deferred developer fee model. The total developer fee is $3,053,000, with $1,526,500 deferred and not fully realized until the ninth year of operations following stabilization, which conforms with HMFA's policy. Based on the aforementioned factors, we are recommending an Aspire award of $25,069,370 for board approval. If approved, this project will be built and ready for occupancy within 24 months of the start of construction. It would represent the successful completion of efforts by Union City to redevelop this site for purposes of meeting its affordable housing needs that began in 2017. And I'm happy to take questions at this time.
Good questions?
Kevin, just out of curiosity, I assume when you're looking at these developers are all taking into account inflation, right? They're building that into their
And that's part of the – we took a couple – shots at this project over the last year and a half, and it's kind of a moving target as their costs are a moving target. And we've many of the projects that we're working with are stuff that was stalled by COVID and then doubly stalled by construction costs after kind of getting their head out of the sand.
So, is the permits under here?
It's city.
So there's no private sector underwriting. In collaboration.
I was just wondering, work with our excellent underwriting. In today's world, how do you think about these projects?
Is the tax credit purchaser, is it city or PNC?
City.
It is city. Yeah, it's like sometimes they're interchangeable.
Sure. Guy with a sledgehammer. Any other questions? All right, could I call for a motion to approve?
Robert, second.
Thank you, Robert. Second?
Second, Elijah.
And thank you, Phil. Any further discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? And none being heard, project is approved. Second, Kevin.
So we are seeking your approval toward up to $9,248,793 in Aspire tax credits to a residential 55 and over 100% affordable housing project in Newark. The project is situated at 9197 Chapel Street and is known as Terrell Homes Phase 1. So this doesn't have as clear of a picture in the renderings, but this is actually an existing public housing facility, and so that's a finished product. But our project is actually situated on that parking lot in the back that is
currently being used to stage various industrial equipment, I think. But that's where that site will go, and it's kind of in the theme, I guess, of the month. And,
so the top right corner?
Yeah. So the applicant is proposing the ground-up construction of a five-story, 69-unit building on an existing surface parking lot. The project consists of one- and two-bedroom units with rents targeting income levels below the 60% of area median income and some below 35% of area median. The applicant is Terrell Redevelopment Partners Urban Renewal, and it is owned by Terrell Affordable Housing LLC with a 1% interest and Chapel Street 220 LLC with a 99% interest. Chapel Street 2020 LLC is the general partner. Terrell Affordable Housing LLC is wholly owned by Joseph Alpert, and Chapel Street 2020 LLC is owned by Builders Believers Trust Corporation with a 50% interest, and Joseph Alpert with a 50% interest. Joseph Alpert is the principal of the lead development entity, the Alpert Group LLC, which is a fourth-generation, family-owned, full-service real estate management development company based out of Fort Lee, New Jersey. The co-applicant is Chapel Street Aspire LLC, so not to be confused with Chapel Street 2020 LLC. That entity is wholly owned by Builders Believers Trust Corporation, which is a 501c3 and an instrumentality of the Newark Housing Authority. As per the program rules, Chapel Street Aspire LLC meets the eligibility guidelines to be the co-applicant, and those guidelines are noted in the board memo. The board memo also gives more project details, including the rents for the affordable units and a specific breakdown of income affordability levels. The new building will include modern amenities and will comply with HMFA's and EDA's green building standards. The total development budget is $34,196,597. To help size the award, we exclude costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules. The total eligible project cost is $28,354,513. The developer must contribute at least 20% equity, or in this case, roughly $6.8 million. The equity in this project, when accounting for the LIHTC and other federal tax credit proceeds, as well as the deferred developer fee, far exceeds that number at roughly $17.9 million. The sources table in the memo shows there are other sources of debt and public funds. Subject to the applicant's request to the program's various award caps, in this case, the project is eligible to receive up to 60% of total eligible costs, or $60 million, whichever is less. However, the award is also subject to a cap of 90% of total eligible costs when factoring the LIHTC award. In this case, that calculus would result in a lower number, and the award would be capped at $9,254,682. This calculation is further detailed in the memo. The applicant has requested an award of $9,248,793. To help further size the award, we looked at the project rate of return. In this case, we use the HMFA developer fee model. The total developer fee is $4,341,000, with $2,062,788 of it deferred and not fully realized until the 19th year of operations. And again, this conforms to HMFA policy. Based on the aforementioned factors, we are recommending a Aspire award of up to $9,248,793 for board approval. If approved, this project would be built and ready for occupancy within 16 months of the start of construction, and it would represent, as I noted before, the first step in a multi-phase redevelopment of the Mildred E. Terrell Homes Puzzle Housing Site that will further support the ongoing revitalization of the Iron Mill neighborhood in New York. Happy to take questions.
So again, it will be built on an empty site. You're not knocking anything down.
No. Well, this project specifically is on a surface parking lot, and then eventually they will begin redeveloping the rest of the site, which those structures are all vacant at this point.
Vacant.
Yeah. So this will add. So this is the first step in adding a tremendous amount of new affordable housing stock to that neighborhood.
The renovation of the existing buildings, that can be encompassed in the grant that we're giving them?
No, it would be separate. And so any
private,
yeah. Well, it's to be determined how it gets done. But if
later date.
Those efforts would be subject to if it comes to it, would be subject to a separate approval. This tax credit is specific to the project that we've defined.
Do you expect them?
Speculating, it's hard to imagine them pulling off a redevelopment of the.
Without
coming out of health.
And the general...
Come with that.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Anyone on the phone? All right, could I have a motion to approve the tax credit program for the Giralda redevelopment project? Motion?
So moved, Glover.
Alicia?
So Lodge is second.
Thank you, Phil. Any further discussion? None being heard. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any refusals or abstentions? None being heard. Motion is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. All right, we're now going to move to film and digital tax media credit. I think I've asked Vice Chairman Sarlo to lead the board through the next vote, as I will be recusing.
Okay.
Matt. Sorry.
Thanks, Matt. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of two applications under the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. One application is under the film side of the program, and the other is under the digital side. We've received a written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets to make sure it's reasonable for industry standards. All the film content has been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. Total credits utilized across the recommended film approval is just over $18.1 million, and the total credits utilized on the digital side is just over $9.5 million. The first film application under consideration is Viacom, Inc., who is responsible for the production of VR from Detroit. This project includes a 2% diversity bonus, and we are recommending an award of $18,147,229. On the digital side, members are asked to approve a single project. The applicant is Audible, Inc. for its 2021 digital media film content based on a qualifying digital media spend of over $29.8 million. We are recommending an award of $9,538,138, which also includes a 2% diversity bonus. Each of these projects would need its own separate vote. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I just want a clarification, just so I'm understanding this. It looks like the filming and everything was completed back in March of this year, so I must not have picked this up before. So we're giving credits for a project that's already been completed. They don't go beforehand for approval.
Yeah, there's no like material factor needed for this tax credit. As long as the expenses are incurred after the program started in 2018. It's kind of an as-of-right program based on your expenditures for the project, as long as those costs are qualified. So we get projects that apply before production, some in the middle, and then some even after they're done.
How do they file prevailing wage? Like, they hire...
film is a little bit of a weird spot for PW, mm-hmm. since a lot of the times any set construction is done by their own employees, or they're done through IOTSI, which is already a prevailing wage... set wages. IOTSI is like a union builder, but on the film side.
Yeah, but I don't think IOTSI follows the prevailing wage for trades. Right?
I think because it's collectively bargained already, it would comply with prevailing wage.
Okay. Do we have a, this is for Viacom and
This involves no capital costs. They've been in Newark for a long time. Is this also...
This is just for their digital media expenditures for the year, essentially for their production of audiobooks in Newark.
Okay. So whatever happened last year, no capital.
Any other questions for Matthew? Okay. So two votes. The first one will be for Viacom International, here from Detroit, for the tax credit of $18 million. $147,229.
Do I have a motion to approve? Dragon,
motion to approve. Second.
Second.
Any further discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Any abstentions, recusals?
Recused.
Chairman, motion passes. Second one is for the digital media tax credit for Audible, Inc. Tax credit amount is $9,538,138. Let's get a motion to approve.
So moved.
Dragon, motion to approve.
Second. Robert Trimfield. Thank you, Robert. Any questions or discussions on this tax credit? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any noes? Abstentions or recusals?
Aisha Glover, I need to recuse as Audible is my employer.
Thank you, Alicia. As noted, motion passes.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, back to the agenda. Grow NJ, Tyshawn.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Apologize for not being there in person. Been a little under the weather lately, but feeling much better now. So today we have a modification request for Stinger, New York. We're requesting an approval to complete the certification of project completion and to affirm that the project has not materially changed, even though the eligible jobs reduced from 74 to 50 and the eligible capital investment reduced from $5 million to $3.2 million. We're also requesting delegated authority to approve a further 10% reduction of eligible jobs if necessary. As a result of this requested change, the approved award will decrease 34% from $6.4 million to $4.2 million, with the potential for further decrease. The CPA certified that the company had made $3.2 million in capital investments, which exceeded the minimum requirement of $1.8 million. The company certified it retained 50 of the 74 at-risk full-time jobs, which exceeded the minimum requirement of 38. The company informed us that they were unable to meet their anticipated full-time jobs and capital investment due to their business being dramatically impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, resulting in their regional business declining by 80%, which halted or delayed certain planned capital investments. Despite this, the project continues to operate as described at board approval, with the company expending over $3.2 million in capital investment and retaining 50 full-time jobs. The project also continues to satisfy the 110% net benefit to the state over 20 years. So thus, aside from the reduction in new jobs and capital investment, the project has not materially changed, and we are requesting approval to complete the certification of Singer's project completion. Thanks for your consideration. Be happy to take any questions.
Any questions?
Yeah.
I hear no questions from the board. Could I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. Second.
Dragon. Second.
Any further discussion? I'm being heard. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? None being heard. The motion is passed. All right, now we're going to move to the Windport, and I think we have three items to consider today, and John is going to present.
John, I need a bottle of water.
Sort of. We do have some slides, and hopefully board members on the phone have a copy of these as well.
Good morning. Members are asked to approve the authority entering into a construction agreement with Atlantic City Electric, ACE, to bring power to the Windport. The agreement is for an 11-mile transmission line that will not exceed $38.3 million, which shall be drawn from the Series A 2023 project bonds that were issued earlier this year. In addition, New Jersey regulations require that ACE provide EDA a consumption credit because the authority is ultimately paying for this line. The credit can be based on a 10-year formula based on the regulation. However, the regulation also allows for the parties to negotiate a lump sum credit. So members are therefore asked to delegate authority to the CEO to negotiate upfront lump sum credit revenue with ACE should be a better deal for EDA rather than the 10-year formula. This agreement is the final step in a series of agreements between EDA and ACE to bring power to the port. The first was January 21, where the board approved approximately $750,000 to ACE to undertake a feasibility study for an optimal route for the line. In April of 2022, the board approved $5 million for ACE to design a detailed design for the optimal route. In November of 22, staff asked the board to approve a long lead item agreement, not to exceed $20 million, to ensure that the materials will be ready once the construction agreement is ready to go. And the agreement before the board today is that anticipated construction agreement. Regarding the terms, the scope consists of three parts. The first is a half-mile path out of the Quinn substation. The second part is rebuilding nearly 10 miles of old transmission line that had been retired by ACE in the 1980s. And then the third part is a 0.8-mile stretch across PSEG nuclear property to bring the line to the proposed substation that will be built at the site. The contract obligates EDA to pay ACE's actual costs up to, not to exceed, $38.3 million. ACE is to complete the work within 8 months of receiving its federal permits to do the work, which ACE believes they should have in hand by the end of September. The 8-month window can only be extended for two reasons. One, there are material shortages, which hopefully we've mitigated against through the long lead materials agreement that I've already mentioned, and the other being unanticipated environmental restrictions that are found in the field. EDA is agreeing to reimburse ACE as required by law for any costs occurred to hazardous material contamination that is not caused by ACE. Due to the linear nature of this project across 11 miles and just the sheer number of utility poles that are needed, ACE's due diligence cannot fully account for all of the excavation of soil that's going to be needed for this line. So as a result, this term does carry some risk. However, we believe that the term is reasonable, because they wouldn't be digging but for the port's need for power. And also the risk is low because 10 out of the 11 miles of the transmission line are within ACE right-of-ways. And so therefore we would first look to ACE as the right-of-way holder to prove that they have not been the ones to cause any contamination. Regarding any delays to the completion of the work, EDA shall be entitled to any pass-through damages that ACE recovers from its construction contractors. Switching over to the credit, New Jersey regulation requires that a regulated entity provide an annual compensation credit where a customer has made a non-refundable capital contribution towards a service extension. The 11-mile transmission line counts as a non-refundable capital contribution. So the regulation calculates the revenue credit not based, unfortunately, on the value of the contribution itself, the $38 million that we are allocating today, but instead the usage that is derived from that line. And so that is done over a 10-year period. However, the regulation also allows for a utility provider to negotiate with the customer an upfront lump sum credit instead. In this case, ACE has expressed a willingness to negotiate with EDA for a better deal, a lump sum credit that we could then use to help offset some of the construction costs of the transmission line. Therefore, members are asked to give delegated authority to the CEO to negotiate with ACE a lump sum credit that is more favorable to EDA than the 10-year credit anticipated by staff based on the regulatory formula. So in summary, members are asked to approve the construction credit and ask the delegate authority to the CEO to negotiate. Happy to answer any questions.
This would also bring to a conclusion the end of my 9 million times asking the question. We're sure we can't run an extension cord from the new plant over here, but I've been told by every lawyer and smart person I ask that is not allowed for various service franchise reasons.
It is frustrating.
And so here we are doing this.
If the cost runs over $38 million, what happens?
Then we will come back to the board and seek further approval.
So we would bear an overage?
That's correct. At the end of the day, we need to bring power to the board. We believe that the anticipated cost of $38 million is well above what will be needed for construction, but yes, anything further.
Excuse me? The contingency is a pretty high health.
It includes 15% contingency.
What are they going to be used for power for construction of the warehouse that are going to be down there?
So it's a good question. For the first several months of the beginnings of the sublease for Orsted, we will have to be using temporary generators until the substation and the transmission line can be fully operational. Ørsted is agreeing to help contribute towards the cost of that power.
So when would this be finished then?
If we are to believe that the federal permits are to come in by the end of September, so we're looking at 8 months from the end of September, so roughly April or so for the transmission line to be done, knowing, however, that the substation will not be done until August or September of that same year.
It's 2024.
Correct. Yes.
The lease for Ørsted would go, you hope, will be started in March, I think?
In beginning of April, yes. So we'll say April 1st. So, yes, so there will be a period of time where temporary generators will be needed.
So they're going to build the substation after they run?
No, the substation construction is actually starting this month. However, it's a pretty massive undertaking, and so it just takes a while for it to complete. So the line can be completed in much less time than the actual substation.
So the substation's on our property at the Windward.
Correct. Yep.
Further questions? Anyone? Okay. Hearing none, why don't we have a motion to approve? Can I hear a motion, please?
Motion to approve, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Second?
Robert Chimpin.
I feel like, you know, Ferris Bueller. Bueller. All right, so may I hear a vote in the affirmative? Indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Dragon abstaining because of the potential for DEP permitting.
Thank you. Noted. Motion passes. All right, John, second item.
Members are asked to approve granting a temporary access license to New Jersey Department of Transportation for dredging activities that DOT is conducting that will benefit the Windport project. The Windport has an access channel and berth pockets that require approximately 2 million cubic yards of dredging, which are being carried out in two phases. The first phase is currently underway. The mechanical dredging, which is mainly shore-side dredging, is being undertaken by EDA through its contractors. However, the phase one hydraulic dredging, which occurs with ships and pipes, is being done by DOT as part of their regular dredging activities. DOT's dredging activities are funded directly through debt avoidance funds. It's not funded through EDA or Windport construction funds. First half of DOT's hydraulic dredging took place last year. The second half is about to occur starting in August. This is to align with the sturgeon moratorium to make sure the work is done before the moratorium is put into place. The deposit site for the material is Abbott's Meadow, which is owned and managed by DEP for the purpose of restoring the natural habitat. Once completed, it will become the largest beneficial reuse site in the state. This license is essentially for DOT to install a pipe across EDA-owned property at the Windport to move the dredge material from the Delaware Bay to Abbott's Meadow. DOT is entering into similar license agreements with the Army Corps, PSC&G, and DEP across their properties. The terms, the license shall not be for any longer than 10 months, commencing upon EDA's approval of DOT's work plan. The license will be provided to DOT at no cost, because although the activity is independent from Windport construction, it is a critical benefit to the Windport. DOT shall keep the licensed property free of any workplace debris and return the property to the same or better condition 2 months after its expiration, and DOT will be responsible for any damage to the property that it causes. So again, members are asked to approve EDA entering into this temporary access license with DOT for this dredge work.
And it's DOT, not the Corps of Engineers, that actually does the dredging?
Yes, that's correct. DOT does the lion's share of dredge work for the state. And so we're taking advantage of their regular dredging activities.
Army Corps principally does things that are federal. They do the federal ship. This is the on-ramp to the federal ship.
All right, any questions?
Comments? Real quick, just give a shout-out in absentia to the DOT team and the commissioner. They've been great partners. We have lots of great partners, including DEP, who's feeding into this research material, and it's been a great partner. Lots of ways that DOT does not often get a spotlight on the wind port, but they've been great partners on this dredging exercise.
Okay, can I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Thank you. Second.
Second, Sorrello.
Thank you, Charles. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? All right.
Noted. Dragon abstaining for potential permitting.
Thank you. Noted. Our motion passes. All right, John, last item.
Last item.
Rolling up to
the item that, that started this meeting. I'm presenting this memo on behalf of Jonathan Kennedy. I say it that way because I'm standing here in large part because of his leadership and Tim's leadership, as well as the countless hours put in by the Windport technical team and commercial and legal teams, and, of course, the dedicated and frankly, superlative legal support that we've gotten from the Attorney General's office. This is a process that started in November of 2020 when EDA issued its first public notice to sublease a parcel at the Windport. Today, members are asked to approve the authority entering into a development agreement and sublease with Orsted Wind Power North America as the Windport's inaugural offshore wind tenant. Orsted will be subleasing up to 34 acres of the property, which is listed as Parcel A on the map that you can see, over an expected 24-month term. The agreement is expected to create up to 200 jobs. The base rent is set at just under $390,000 per acre per year, that amount being set in April of 2022 when the LOI was signed between the parties. It is escalated annually thereafter in addition to pass-through costs. Assuming the 24-month term, that means that total rent is estimated at over $25 million, well above the board-approved fair market rent floor of $6 million that was approved in August of 2020. This is a fairly lengthy and complex lease, and the memo goes into a fair amount of detail about the terms, so I will just highlight some of the most important items for this presentation. EDA is obligated to build 30.183 acres of property infrastructure purpose-built for staging and assembly of turbine components by no later than March 31st, 2024. There is an element of risk to this commitment. Orsted is eligible for cap damages in the event EDA is delayed, those damages being any liquidated damages that EDA recovers from its construction manager, as well as a rent offset sized at 2 days credit per 1 day of delay, up to a maximum of 12 months credit. In addition, EDA must use reasonable best efforts to bring an additional 4 acres online by September 1, 24, but the additional acreage is not subject to delay damages. Orsted sublease will commence upon substantial completion and will terminate no later than March 31, 2026, assuming that the port is completed on time. Beyond March 31, 26, a six-month holdover period will apply. For those first 3 months, the holdover rent is set at 200%, and for that following 3 months, the holdover is set at 250%, both of those capped at actual damages. Orsted will be obligated to pay pass-through costs consistent with a net lease. They are subject to annual caps of $1 million for property taxes and $670,000 in EDA and PSE&G pass-through costs. EDA is committing to share Orsted's power costs for the approximate six-month period that we just talked about where the port will be relying on temporary generators. Orsted will be required to share the berth as adjacent to Parcel A starting January 1st, 2026 to ensure that future tenants also have access to the berth. That will be governed by a berth booking system and operating protocol. Finally, regarding repair and maintenance responsibilities, EDA is responsible for all planned maintenance. However, if Orsted does damage the parcel in any way, they are obligated to pay those damages. However, EDA reserves the right to undertake any repairs over $5 million. So, in summary, this event marks the Windport's initial impact on the offshore wind industry. Ocean Wind 1 couldn't happen but for the port.
And so this sublease indirectly supports over 15,000 jobs over Ocean Wind's 25-year operational history, making this a strong financial result not only for EDA, but for the state. So therefore, members are asked to approve the authority entering into these agreements. I do need to point out that we are still in the process of gathering state compliance documents from Orsted, but we'd have them all in by today. We still are missing one or two, so this board's approval will be contingent on receiving all those compliance documents. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, John. Just added 30 seconds of coda on that. This is a full hat tip to the president. This is a BFD, a big financial deal
for the EDA, the state.
We have said from the jump that we thought we had a really attractive asset in the marketplace as a commercial matter, and this is the first dollars and cents validation of that thesis. The rent we're getting here is very attractive and strong. This is, by the way, a project that was going to Marshall and Seaborn's from Virginia prior to us developing this on the accelerated timetable that, that John referenced. And so this is a big milestone that validates the reason that we think we've got the tiger by the tail here from a port asset perspective. This couldn't have, there's nowhere in New Jersey that could have hosted this project prior to this being developed. We think, and again, this is an important validation that we think we've got the best asset region / entire East Coast. That's going to drive strong rent and a strong payback to the state for the significant investment that's been made. Because this is $25 million over two years, $25 million bucks for one project. There's a lot that comes behind this, but a strong outcome. That sort of sets an important threshold and an important floor, if you will, for the financial picture of the project going forward. So it's a big deal.
John, how do you feel about the, what's our confidence level that it will be completed by March 2024?
Good question. The port is over 70% complete, or sorry, the parcel is over 70% complete at this point, and we are on schedule to have substantial completion by March 14th of 2024.
And no, again, I was there, you know, 2 weeks ago, and I encourage, put a burden on you, but I encourage any other board members to go. In many aspects, it's an amazing trip, including going through Salem County and seeing the potential impact this could have on the county. It doesn't appear that there's any. I shouldn't say that.
Please don't say we're going to. This is a done deal.
Yeah, no, but it's
feeling good.
We are continuing. It will be a continuation of what you have in place.
Correct.
And then the second question is, once we complete Parcel A, and we can service the Orsted lease, proceeding to Parcel B, C, et cetera, is. Are steps we can determine in the future.
That's correct.
Our goal here is to get a strong foundation built and then see where the market leads us.
Right. So I mean, we get this up and running. We have a contract. We can actually create revenue from Parcel A, and then we have a chance to assess the environment.
Exactly right.
And really establish our identity along the East Coast.
And in that respect, there are actually notices already published for both Parcel A after this lease and for some of the other parcels. So there are some negotiations already happening for those. But this obviously establishes that as a credible, it lends that credibility to those negotiations.
Again, this is Parcel A. If we deliver Parcel A, we're satisfying our Orsted lease.
Yeah, when we first signed this, we signed the letter of intent around this in April of 2022. In some ways, the delays associated with this project have played to our benefit because we're 8 months away from go day as opposed to 22 months away from go day, 24 months to the day. So that confidence interval goes up by the day.
Typically, you would enter into a development agreement pretty early on in the process. You know, we're at 70% complete now, so obviously our risk exposure is significantly less.
And this will be the last one where we've got that risk in it. So 10 and 2, hooked up. That's it. I'm not sure about that one, which we will be because March 14th turns into March 28th, turns into April 28th, it starts to get a little hairy. But
we won't talk about
that. We feel good about where we are.
For Parcel A, for Orsted, do they have an idea what they're going to be doing on Parcel A? I'm assuming they're going to be doing prefabrication of, say, the towers. They're going to be accepting the nacelles and assembling all that.
There's an inbound and an outbound, so they're going to bring in everything that they're. Some of it's coming from up the river in Paulsboro, some of it coming from overseas in terms of the cells, some of the other components. all oversimplifies, it all gets put together, gets sort of straight, and out it goes.
So the prefabrication and all the assembly, that's all going to be done under prevailing wage?
The manufacturing is being done off-site and not in New Jersey, but it's the parcel is being used as essentially a staging area, a clicking facility, to be able to put everything together. And we are still going through and looking through prevailing wage and State Building Services Act and all these other conditions as well.
This lease requires labor harmony.
Yes.
Requires labor harmony.
But the EBA's prevailing wage, because there's not financial assistance, this is a tenant, doesn't necessarily apply. But as Tim said, in the lease, there is a labor harmony provision.
Right. There's no finance, but since the EBA lease, right, the prevailing wage does apply
for any construction, which I think we're building our building is under a PLA.
Right. You're right, for construction.
But the construction of the tower, that's prefabrication.
That's why we're requiring labor harmony. We can't impose prevailing wage. Our statute is not allowed us to impose prevailing wage on that, but labor harmony.
It's probably something we should look into and find. We always refer to construction. Construction, of course, includes a number of other activities. But I think you're talking about the construction prevailing wage, like on the state prevailing wage on state lands.
Or that is also entered into a regional, national. I forget what it's called, but it's a cooperative agreement with the National Building Trades around all their activities.
Offshore, that's correct.
Yeah, there's still some labor. There's still some who's going to do what questions around the point.
Right. You're classifying as manufacturing, but it's really prefabrication of construction, right? Because they're only doing it on land because it's much easier on land than it would be done in on the water. Like they would have to build a coffer dam and able to build the monopile out in the ocean, which is almost impossible to do. So they're doing it on land realistically to save time and money. Right? So that's a prefabrication shop. It's not a manufacturing shop.
But there won't be any structures. They're not building any
structures. Well, the monopile is a structure, no?
I think you meant building something that there's not a factory. On parcel A, there's not any outbuildings that are being constructed by Orsted or anybody else.
I understand, but they're going to be assembling and I'm assuming they're going to be pre-qualified. I don't know. Right. The town. They're going to get the monopile in the water. They're going to have a transition piece that either they're getting shipped in or they're going to be manufacturing at parcel A, or if they do the tower, they're going to be prefabbing the internals of the tower. They have to get somehow from the transition piece to the nacelle with equipment. So they're going to do that on land. Or it's coming across from Europe or wherever you're going to get it from. But if anything that's going to be prefab on parcel A, is that going to require prevailing wage?
In that regard, we're requiring labor harmony, and that's more state contract, not an EDA contract. But first, I don't think there's much prefab. I don't think there's any. They're bringing in a lot of finished product here for the source project. For the subsequent projects, we hope to be having them manufacturing them on parcel G and parcel B2, and that'll all be subject to all variety of whatever we choose to impose on them. But
we are hoping to build a much more robust manufacturing presence at the site, and of course those questions certainly play into that more considerably.
Well, we're talking semantics, right? Manufacturing or prefab, right? It's prefab for the construction of the window.
Yes. But to Tim's point earlier, whether or not we have the ability to impose prevailing wage on a tenant who's going to be doing the work, as opposed to what we've entered into, which is labor, or what we've required, which is entering into a labor harmony agreement, to try and find a way if we're not able to do prevailing wage, to be able to at least ensure that there is an element of protection for labor.
That's definitely. The intent here is for this to be overwhelming. It's not exclusively union work. Can't require that. Yep.
Any other questions? Anyone on the phone? Okay, none being heard.
I just,
yes, go ahead, Marcia.
I have one question.
You say that there's going to be a 5-month shared cost of electricity with Orsted, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Then what if it takes longer to build the subset station? Will that continue, that shared responsibility?
It is anticipated that until we bring power to the site.
Okay.
Correct.
Assuming we approve this today, when would you expect the agreement to actually be executed by both parties?
Sometime in August.
Soon.
Yeah. Again, this doesn't happen but for the legislation being signed. So
yes. Okay. Can I hear a motion to approve entering into the development agreement and sublease with Orsted?
Motion approved.
Thank you, Marcy. Second? Anyone on the phone? Second?
Keith White, second.
Thank you. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? All right, none being heard. The motion is approved. Congratulations. Tim, board memoranda.
I'll be brief. You have a few memos in your pack. We're running close to time here, so I'll be brief. The one thing I want to highlight is, this was mentioned earlier in the meeting, as part of the Economic Recovery Act that the governor signed in early 2021, we're required to bring on board every 2 years a New Jersey-based university to do an evaluation on the programs, particularly Aspire, Emerge, and Brownfields. We contracted with NJIT earlier this year to do that work. Their summary, their initial report is included in your pack. It doesn't require board action to approve it. It'd be tempting to say, gosh, it's early. There haven't been any brownfields projects yet. There's only been 3 emerges. There's only been a handful of Aspires. But that being said, the report card, I think, that we have in that report on the structuring of the rules, where the application process has been laid out, it includes some helpful feedback. It's not, you know, it's not 100 on the test, but it's a very strong, I think, validation of the work that the team and this board have put into doing our damnedest to get it right and structure these things thoroughly, efficiently, transparently from the jump. So I think there are many reasons to feel good about this report card, even though it is based on a limited number of projects, but it is in process and it evaluates structures. It's evaluated, I think, are quite well reviewed.
As I was going to say, as the newest member of the board, I found it just helpful in terms of an outline and the summary of what we're doing.
With that, have you taken any questions, or yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman?
Okay. I think with that, we're going to enter the public comment portion of the meeting. First, is Danielle going to read it, or are you going to read the public comment policy and process for the board?
Mr. Chairman, there are no public comments at this time. Okay. Operator, can you double check?
Ladies and gentlemen. We should read the policy.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment, please.
Excuse me, operator. We have to read the public comment policy in case somebody...
Oh, I apologize.
Does have a question. So for any members of the public who would like to provide public comment, each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker would announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority, and staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. And the speaker may speak once in the public comment period and providing related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to the email. Thank you.
Okay, I want to acknowledge any members of the public who have registered to speak on the phone or in person. Operator, do we have anyone?
We do not have anyone on the phone lines.
And no one in person? Okay, if there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone on the staff and my fellow board members for their participation today.
and we, I believe, do not have a meeting in April. We'll have our, sorry, in August. We'll have our next meeting in September. Thank everybody. Wish them a good summer. May I hear a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Second.
Robert seconded it. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed to adjourning the meeting? All right, thank you. This concludes our meeting. Thanks, everybody, and have a great rest of the summer. We'll see you in September.
12 noon to the penny, by the way.
Exactly.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service.
Thank you, Robert.
You may now disconnect.
We're sorry, your conference.